You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at lockedonbulls.com and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShot. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. You guys have done an amazing job this season of dropping us text messages and voicemails, so continue to do that. We play the best ones every single week on our mailbag segment. Matt, welcome back from the weekend. I know we didn't have a show yesterday. We figured with conflicting schedules yesterday, we figured, you know what? There's going to be an OKC game in a few hours. Why not we just save everything from the weekends, plus what happened in the OKC game, for a lengthier episode today? So that's what we decided to do. But welcome back from the weekend now that it's Tuesday.
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Hope everybody had a good weekend. The Bears are NFC North champs. I am very happy about that.
Oh, yeah.
It certainly has helped my depression with the recent state of the Bulls to have the Bears back on top of their division and to do it against the Packers. So that was certainly the nice cherry on top to my weekend. We have a couple of Bulls games to break down, and at least one of them was a pretty impressive win, a comeback win against the Spurs. Of course, last night's game against the Thunder got ugly, but we are all too familiar with those kind of games this season, aren't we?
Indeed we are. And the Bulls, you mentioned it, pretty surprising win against San Antonio over the weekend. You know, the Bulls go down at halftime. They go down as much as 21 points. And they come back and beat the San Antonio Spurs. Our, you know, Boylan's hero, you know, makes mention again of all the Greg Popovich stories coming out. This is sort of perfect timing for more and more of those to come out. And it did last night. And Jim Boylan must have felt a little bit of a sigh of relief being able to beat his former coach, the guy that he mentions in all of his press conferences. But the Bulls played a damn good game in that second half. I felt like, you know, on top of Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn, those two guys carried the Bulls in that second half, and especially Chris Dunn. And all the nonsense people were talking about Chris Dunn, I don't know if he's going to be able to play in the league, you know, chirping him at even in the first half of this game. And then he comes out and is end up being able to help the Bulls pull out a win last night. I'm not saying I agree with every shot Dunn took, especially late in that fourth quarter, but they dropped.
Yeah, I mean, we talked sometimes last season about how Dunn was actually a pretty good clutch player. When the Bulls were playing really well in that stretch of games in December and January, when Dunn was actually healthy for the longest stretch last season, he had some big buckets and some big plays late in games as the Bulls were going on a bit of a winning streak, and were certainly winning more than they were losing. So he certainly had a hand in that, and because of that, I have always been trying to wait to reserve my judgment on Chris Dunn this season. And it really stinks that once again he had a lengthy injury right at the beginning of this season that really, you know, got him sidetracked. Because people, you're right, Jordan, a lot of Bulls fans are saying, like, you know, Chris Dunn ain't it. He's not the guy. He can't be a starting point guard in this league. He certainly can't be a good starting point guard in this league. He's probably just a backup, et cetera, et cetera. I wanted to have faith in Chris Dunn, and I liked what I saw from him at times last season, as I said. And so, like, right now, I think that one of the biggest and most important things for this Bulls team for the next 50 games or so is to really evaluate Chris Dunn and how he plays with the other key pieces in this starting core right now, Markkanen, Wendell, and LaVine. And now it's a shame that LaVine's ankle is giving him trouble. So we still have really not seen Dunn, LaVine, Markkanen, and the new addition Wendell play that much together this season, like, at all, like 10 minutes or so. So that being said, I did like to see Chris Dunn leading the Bulls in that one, and especially kind of redeeming himself, because in their loss before the Spurs game, he had that offensive foul late in the game that was one of a few costly mistakes there. So, you know, it's been a mixed bag from Chris Dunn, but I'm going to wait until we see hopefully a sample size of about 50 more games before I try and make up my mind with his future on the team.
I agree. And, like, playing 50 games consecutively, right? It's like anytime Chris Dunn plays like 20, 25 games and there's an injury that keeps him out for 2, 3, 4 weeks at a time. And then it's like you got to restart almost from scratch again, getting him back in his mode, getting back to playing an NBA game. So I thought this was good for Chris Dunn for his ego. It was good for that boost of confidence that he needed, getting his swagger back. Like, Matt, I go back, and it was almost to the day last year, 1 year ago, this weekend, where Chris Dunn hit that almost the same exact shot to seal the game against the Utah Jazz at home. And, you know, he was going up against Alec Burks, and it was at home, and he was pointing down to the ground, and he said, "You can't effing guard me." Almost to a year to date, Chris Dunn comes back and hits two dagger shots that end up sealing the victory for this Bulls team. So, you know, that was kind of a turning point last year when we were talking about Chris Dunn. And, man, I think this is the game that's going to kind of turn that switch and give Chris Dunn his swagger. And maybe that's this game. And maybe that's why I was so excited about this win. On top of maybe it's kind of a senseless win on the road, okay. But for Chris Dunn to be able to close in clutch time and give him that confidence boost, that's what I want to see. And we needed that earlier rather than later. And I'm glad it came just in, what, his third game back since the injury. So it's all good things from Chris Dunn when he's knocking down shots and not turning the ball over, which he didn't do against the Spurs, just one turnover. And that's another thing. The Bulls only had 7 turnovers in the entire game. So credit to the Bulls for being able to handle the ball. Like, that is crazy. Like, we talked about it. In the Jim Boylan era, they were averaging 22 turnovers a game, and they only turned it over 7 times. So another credit to the Bulls.
Yeah. As you said, their average with Boylan, as he's tried to slow things down to eliminate mistakes and make them more efficient, has not really been working out the way he planned it or the way he talked about it. Because, yeah, we only turned the ball over 7 times against the Spurs, and that certainly was one of the factors that allowed us to come back into that game after digging ourselves a 20-point hole. And credit to the Bulls for doing that. But last night against the Thunder, 23 more turnovers. So, I mean, how frequently can we see games where we can keep that turnover number to a respectably small amount? Because as you and I have talked about before, whether it was the start of this season when they were playing without Markkanen and without Dunn and without Bobby and were so shorthanded on talent, and now missing their leading scorer, Zach LaVine, and, you know, as much as we may want to laugh about how and why one of their, you know, second leading scorers, Jabari Parker, being out of the rotation on the trading block, I mean, whichever way you shuffle it, they are lacking in talent across the board this season, and they have very little room for error, which is why Boylan has been harping on being a more efficient offensive team. Now, I don't necessarily think that what he has employed is working because, yeah, they only turned it over 7 times against the Spurs, but we saw 23 more last night against OKC. So hopefully with Dunn back in the fold and him continuing to knock off some rust, get himself into game shape and really becoming comfortable being that starting point guard again, we can see his assist to turnover ratio increase. when LaVine comes back. Hopefully LaVine can continue to cut down on his turnovers as, you know, the other primary ball handler and facilitator on this team. But, I mean, hey, if they can do it on the road against a, you know, a decent opponent in the Spurs, then they should be able to do it regularly. But we haven't seen them do it consistently yet.
Yeah, and the Spurs aren't the Spurs of what we were used to, right? 11-5 at home, which is actually good for the Bulls. The Bulls were 3-12 in road games coming into this one. So beating a team that's fairly good at home is also credit to those guys. But like you said, I don't think I'm buying. I have to see what Chris Dunn's going to do against elite point guards, too, and just bringing it back real quick, because let's be honest, like, Bryn Forbes was the guy guarding Chris Dunn for the majority of the night and just getting run all over the place, just couldn't keep up with him. Chris Dunn was too big, too long, too fast for Bryn Forbes, and there's a couple other guys, too, that were playing quality minutes that it's like, on normal teams having to guard Chris Dunn night in and night out, we might see a little bit more of a struggle, maybe more so to what we saw against OKC rather than what we saw against the Spurs. But yeah, let's not give the Bulls too much credit here. The Spurs just a awful, awful performance in that second half. They couldn't knock down a shot if you left them wide open. Like, that was what the Spurs were dealing with, and the Bulls capitalized on it. They made a lot of their shots against the Spurs, and Spurs looked terrible. Outside of LaMarcus Aldridge, who just ate up Wendell Carter Jr. in this game, like, outside of him, they had Bellinelli with 17 points off the bench, and they had DeRozan, who had 21.
I was going to say, don't forget about our boy Marco. 5 of 7 from downtown. He was rain. I think he started like 4 of 4 from downtown. And I was like, oh man, this is going to be a game where the Bulls lose big because Marco Bellinelli is embarrassing them.
I hated
them.
Marco Bellinelli when he was here. Just going to be straight up honest.
Loved him. Hey man, he was going to be the hero or he was going to be the GOAT. But either way, he was going to make it entertaining.
That's true. So that's the Spurs. That's the wrap up from the Spurs and the Bulls game this weekend. Also, wanted to play this clip for you, Matt. Don't know if you caught it on Instagram, but the Bulls decided to make a little bit of a feel-good video after this win. Did you see what Boylan said?
You guys have done everything I've asked you to do. The conditioning, the video sessions. Okay? This is your win against a real good team in a tough building, and I'm so proud of you guys. Okay? Now we're going to start playing winning basketball. I'm very proud of you. Coaches, hell of a job. Can't do it without you. Medical staff, hell of a job. We are becoming a family, and we are going to build this culture, and we are going to be champions. But we got to take it one step at a time. We just took one big step today.
The post-game locker room comments he had where he was talking about, you know, it's a long process and, you know, it's one step at a time. Tonight was a big step and, you know, we're going to be champions. When he said that we're going to be champions part, I guffawed.
I thought we were in, like, Northwestern's locker room for a second, or maybe, like, we were in Loyola's locker room. Maybe this is a flashback to the Final Four last year. Like, I got a very college-y vibe from it. And I don't know. Maybe that's what these guys need. I don't know. Maybe that's what they need in order to buy in, but I don't know. If I was a professional basketball player, and I'm clearly not, I don't know if I would be buying into the whole college-y mentality of that. Like, I would be like, yeah, I get it, man. It was a good win, but other than that, come on, let's pump the brakes on being champions anytime soon.
Well, you know, he's trying to get the guys to buy in, and I think more so, you know, Boylan's talking about building, you know, a championship caliber culture and, you know, believe in doing things the right way and yada, 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 and everything that we're hearing from Paxson, too, in his vocal support of Jim Boylan. So I wasn't necessarily surprised to see Boylan speak like that to his players after, you know, good for them. They hung in there. They came back from 20 points down and they won on the road. I don't care who you're playing. At the NBA level, that's hard to do. And yeah, they dug themselves that hole, but they dug out of it, and they won a game on the road. For all of the drama that this Bulls team has been through over the past couple of weeks, give them credit for doing that. So I can understand that Boylan was pretty jazzed up and excited after getting that win, especially against his, you know, his mentor, his former colleague, Greg Popovich. So you want to use that opportunity of trying to get your guys to believe and buy into the way you're doing things by saying, look, see, we won tonight. I coached, you played, we won as a team. clearly that message might get through a little bit more than Boylan just yelling his face purple into a brick wall as the Bulls are losing by 20 and 30 again. So, you know, certainly, you know, I'm going to cut Boylan a little bit of slack to say, I just got our guys to fight back and win on the road. Never easy. So, yeah, I'm going to use this opportunity to, you know, puff out my chest, but not just my chest, but pump their chests out as well.
Well, we can talk about the OKC game because the chest has been deflated, I think, in a couple days later after being quickly brought back down to earth by Oklahoma City. We'll talk about that on the other side of a break. Stay with us here on Locked On Bulls, back in 60 seconds. Back here on Locked On Bulls, Matt. Wanted to let you know, there is still no Woj pod. Just throwing that out there. You know, I gave credit where credit was due. I said, you know what, all right, I'll give the benefit of the doubt. They said Tuesday, didn't come out last Tuesday. Jim Boylan's supposed interview that was supposed to go on the Woj pod all across ESPN didn't come out last Tuesday. Today is Tuesday, still not out. So I think there's a podcast that will... is somewhere in ESPN's lockup of tapes that will never be released or something. But clearly, there's a reason why the Bulls didn't want him to talk. I don't know what it was, but there's clear
somewhere
reason.
There is a Indiana Jones type vault of ESPN audio, and the Jim Boylan Woj pod will be forever lost in the ever expansive giant storage facility of ESPN audio.
Yeah, it's locked up with the Dez tape that Adam Schefter supposedly saw, right?
Right, exactly.
All right, let's get to some other stuff here. One thing I did want to mention, though, speaking of puffing up your chest after a Spurs win, Matt, the Bulls have played 7 games under Jim Boylan, and I just wanted to read some of these advanced analytics for you as far as the way the Bulls are playing under him so far. So the Bulls' offensive rating is a 94.2 in 7 games under Jim Boylan. That's the worst offensive rating in the NBA. They have a defensive rating of 109.4. 109.4 comes in at 16. So they're an average NBA defense under Jim Boylan, which is kind of expected, right? But they are the worst offensive rated team in the NBA, 94.2, and the worst net rating of -15.1, just in front of the Clippers, who are at -14. So some of these things are still putting the Bulls at the bottom of the barrel in the NBA. And to give Boylan a little bit of credit, the talent on this roster is not very good. So you kind of expect that, but it went from an offensive rating, a Bulls team who was playing around a 101 to 104 offensive rating, dipped down all the way to 94.2, which is just unheard of in today's NBA.
Yeah, I mean, it's really bad, which is why I was saying it a little bit earlier as far as Boylan trying this whole, you know, walk before we can run strategy to increase offensive efficiency. Flat out hasn't worked. Not working right now. And the slowing down of the Bulls offense, which really at this point has come to a crawl, has not prevented them from turning the ball over. We're seeing still, outside of that, you know, the Spurs game, as we mentioned, where they only turned it over 7 times, we're still seeing an average of like somewhere between 18 and 23 turnovers.
Right. The Bulls are still number one
good.
In turnover percentage, 19.6 turnover
right.
percentage.
Right, so even though they're slowing the pace down and thus have fewer possessions per game, they're still turning the ball over at the same, if not a higher rate, which is honestly hard to do. I don't know how they're doing that. But, I mean, if Fred Hoiberg's offense was anything in its efficiency, it is that he did get the guys to push the pace. And transition defense across the NBA as a whole is bad these days. It is very bad.
It's non-existent.
So, I mean, like, yeah, exactly. It doesn't really exist. So Fred's whole, like, let's get a shot and a good shot before our opponent's defense gets set thing, it at least makes sense on face value. Jim Boylan is like slowing this down to a 90s half court kind of offense where he's allowing his opponent's defense to set themselves. And how many times last night was I watching this game against the Thunder rolling my eyes out of the back of my head because the Bulls were trying to do some kind of post-up situation, whether it was Markkanen or somebody else or even like Robin Lopez, who had five turnovers last night in 17 minutes. Your backup center had five turnovers in 17 minutes. Why are you trying to get him that many possessions? No offense to Rolo, veteran, leader of this team. You certainly saw that with the fight that broke out last night, but come on. You really trying to run your offense through Robin Lopez, Jim Boylan? What are you doing?
Bobby had five turnovers too, and that so that clearly backs up your point. It's like Boylan was making it a choice to drive the ball into the paint, which makes absolutely no sense when you're going up against a guy in the quality of Steven Adams, right? I had mentioned it before, what, a week and a half ago when they played OKC? Steven Adams had, I think, 16 points in the first quarter. He had 12 in the first 4 minutes because he was just dominating the Bulls. And he can do that on the defensive side of the ball, too. He can rebound and he can block shots. So it was a little bit wild to me to see that the Bulls were trying to drive the ball into the paint when it was clearly not working. Instead of trying to get some of your shooters some opportunities in open looks, instead of just driving it down the throat of OKC, which you clearly saw
no,
it wasn't working.
And you know, they finally have gotten themselves a roster that has a non-zero number of three-point shooters on it. And outside of Holiday going 3 for 8, which for him is, you know, okay, not terrible, not great. You know, Hutch hit 2 off the bench, but both of those came in garbage time when the Bulls were already down 20. Like, Jim Boylan is grinding against what this Bulls roster can do offensively, and I don't understand it. Now, look, there is something to be said for him trying to make a point of getting Markkanen looks in the post because Markkanen's post-up game needs work. We have seen not only Bulls guards struggle with their entry passes to get Markkanen looks when Markkanen has a mismatch on him, and we saw more of that last night. It was driving me crazy. But Markkanen, you know, as far as what he needs to work on, yeah, the entry passes have been lacking this season, but he's also struggling to create that position for himself. And sometimes when he's trying to post up, he ends up doing so way out, almost all the way to the three-point line. So I can understand Boylan trying to really focus on getting some of those fundamentals of offensive sets with some of the bigs that they have on this roster, because Markkanen, as a seven-footer who can spread the floor, is not as lethal as a guy spreading the floor if he's also not just as lethal in the post. He needs to be good at both to be a peak offensive player in today's NBA. So I'm fine with Boylan trying to get that going with Markkanen, but posting up Robin Lopez as the reason that you're slowing down your offense and, by the way, still turning the ball over 23 times, I mean, that to me makes no freaking sense.
I'm with you on all of what you just said. And another thing about Markkanen, too, that I noticed just watching the film over the last few games that he's played in is the Bulls, and this even goes back to last year, when the Bulls were playing well and Markkanen was scoring at a ridiculous rate and shooting all these threes at the high percentage he was, between specifically December and January, Chris Dunn, the guards that were playing around him, were hitting him off of pick and rolls, were hitting him off of pick and pops, and were finding those mismatches. They seem to not be finding that ability. I can't tell you how many times I watched Markkanen switch on to a small guard against the Spurs, and nobody looked for him. Nobody looked for him. And so that's what the Bulls guards got to get better at, is finding Markkanen in those mismatches. Because you get him outside of the basket from 12, 15 feet in a short jumper, he's going to knock it down every single time. And he showed you that against the Spurs. There was a couple times where they did hit him, and he knocked down shots. So that's another thing, too, Matt. I agree with you on the post game, too. He's got to learn how to develop that part of the game. So Boylan does deserve a little bit of credit for trying to find a way to get him shots there. And it's got to develop. You got to use these in-game situations to develop that kind of game. And so I'm glad that they're at least pointing it to that. But to create outside looks for Markkanen, too, the guard's got to be better at finding the mismatches with him. One thing that I did bag Markkanen about, and credit to him, was I said against
rebounding, baby.
OKC, he was getting destroyed left and right. Not just him, but Wendell Carter Jr. too. They were getting tossed around like rag dolls. And last night, he had 15 rebounds. Good for Markkanen, man. Watched the film, saw what he was doing wrong, and made some adjustments. Good on Markkanen last night, even though the Bulls got blown out by nearly 30.
Yeah, I mean, even though the Bulls lost this game by a wide margin, doesn't mean you can't credit Markkanen for increasing an area of his game, improving an area of his game where we have addressed that he needs to work on it. And it's something that Markkanen said himself when all of the players had their little one-on-one meetings with Boylan after he took over for Fred. Markkanen said that, you know, Boylan told me, obviously we want you to find your shots and, you know, and be a big piece of this team offensively, but I really want you to work on your rebounding as an area of your game that can really improve. And clearly Markkanen has taken that to heart because you saw him really working on the glass last night and on both ends. Like, you know, you were just talking a second ago about how Steven Adams was crushing the Bulls in the first game between these two teams this season. And, you know, all of his insane first quarter points were coming essentially all off of his own offensive rebounds. Steven Adams had 5 more offensive rebounds in last night's game, but Lauri Markkanen had 7. 7 of his 15 rebounds on the offensive end, creating some second chance points for the Bulls, which clearly is valuable because, you know, it's essentially the opposite of turning the ball over, which the Bulls did 23 times. So this Bulls offense, which is not very efficient right now, if Markkanen could create them a couple of second chance opportunities because he's going to work on the offensive glass and starting to, you know, make it known that he's not afraid to go bang some bodies down there and get rough and physical to try and use his body to get some O-boards, like, you gotta love that.
I want to talk quickly before we talk about the fight that ensued last night, Robin Lopez getting ejected. Another thing, Wendell Carter Jr., I don't understand what Boylan is doing with his minutes. It seems weird, and I know Wendell Carter Jr. is not helping himself out by getting into foul trouble early. We've talked about it multiple times. Matt, I tweeted it out. Wendell Carter Jr. has the most fouls in the first half of any NBA player this season. 56, if you include last night's, and might be even more. I'd have to check the number on that, but he has the most fouls in the first half of anybody in the NBA. So you can tell why that adds to the struggle that he's had this season. When you get into foul trouble early, you have to be very cautious about the way you're playing, and that frustrates me. And then on top of that, he's just got the fourth most fouls in the NBA as a whole. So just looking at first half and then as the whole, and he didn't help himself out against San Antonio. He only played 21 minutes there and fouled out. Last night he had 5 fouls and was reinserted back into the game when the Bulls were already down 20. So he's not helping himself out, but also at the same time, I don't think it does him any good to reinsert him back into a game down 20 with the second string guys. I just don't see any, improvement being able to be made there when you're playing with the second unit. So that's just me. I'm curious what Boylan is trying to do with his minutes, because it looks weird.
Yeah, I mean, I think there might be some kind of thing going on here where Fred saw Wendell as the team's number 7 overall pick and a kid who's clearly, at least from a basketball IQ standpoint, like, he's ahead of the curve for a 19-year-old. And Fred saw Wendell as a guy who fit his pace and space game more so than Robin Lopez. So, you know, if those are your options for who you're starting at the 5, the 19-year-old who's willing to get out there and run the floor and can do so a little more effectively than Robin Lopez, makes sense that Fred decided to start Wendell over Robin. I think that Jim Boylan certainly still sees Wendell as an inexperienced rookie who's not really ready for the full load of being an NBA starter. I don't know if Boylan will go so far as to take Wendell out of the starting lineup and start starting Robin instead.
That would be so freaking pointless.
I mean, I don't see the point to that. I know that, you know, Boylan says, well, you know, let's walk before we can run, and therefore you don't necessarily worry about Robin Lopez and his slow mobility if you're slowing things down. But to me, you know, Wendell and Markkanen need to develop as much chemistry as possible in a season that is essentially at this point a lost season. The ways that you can salvage this season and make it not completely useless is seeing the development of chemistry between Markkanen and Wendell, between Levine and Dunn, between Levine and Markkanen and Wendell, et cetera, et cetera. So you see how these pieces that you're trying to build around actually fit together, which is why it stinks that Wendell's getting into all this foul trouble. And some of it, I think, is really unfair to him. He's gotten so many questionable calls against him. Even just like things like moving screens that, in my opinion, aren't moving screens. And simple stuff like that. And ticky-tack stuff. And then also fouls where his teammates are leaving him hung out to dry. He's absorbing so many fouls that aren't necessarily his fault this season. And, of course, some of them are because he's a rookie who's still kind of learning the ropes. It's frustrating. But I don't think that Jim Boylan should punish
Agreed.
Him
for and
it.
I think you're spot on about the combination of him having to bail his teammates out for bad switches, for getting blown past the basket. That happened a lot with not only Parker on the floor playing alongside Wendell, but that happened a lot with Zach LaVine at times. So that makes sense. And also to the ticky-tack fouls, we've said it since the beginning of the season that the refs are just not giving Wendell Carter Jr. any benefit of the doubt. He had two against LaMarcus Aldridge that literally, I don't even think Wendell Carter Jr. touched him, and he got called for fouls. So maybe that's part of the growing process for a rookie, but it certainly sucks when you can't even get him on the floor because refs are giving him two or three fouls at the beginning of the first half, and or guys on his team aren't playing good enough defense, so he's got to bail them out at times. So it's going to be a learning process for him, but I agree with you too. I hope Boylan doesn't punish Carter for some of the injustices he's getting for the fouls that he's getting called for. So hopefully there's an adjustment there coming sooner rather than later. All right, Matt, let's get to the fight last night. How about that? What do you think about Russell Westbrook? Classic Russell Westbrook, you know, hold me back, and then just doesn't get in anybody's face. And then all of a sudden it turns to Robin Lopez, and Robin Lopez is staring down Jerami Grant and getting thrown into the benches. And then Boylan's got his arm wrapped around a player's head trying to drag guys off. It was a wild scene last night.
Okay, so clearly Westbrook started it.
Oh, 100%.
I was so amused when Russ was arguing with the refs after, you know, the double texts were handed out. Russ is essentially trying to say, like, hey, man, like, he pushed me. And the ref, you couldn't hear the audio, but you could see them. And you could kind of do some lip reading from the NBA official, who then pointed over to the scores table where they just watched the replay and said to Russ, like, dude, I just watched you. You started it by pushing Chris. Of course, you know, nothing Russell Westbrook ever does is his fault. And, of course, it's not on him that fight broke out. Of course Russ started it. We saw Russ trying to pick a fight with Nikola Jokic just a few nights ago. That dude is nuts. He's clearly got the Napoleon complex going on. Little guy who just doesn't want to back down from anybody. And, of course, Robin Lopez was being the dutiful veteran leader that he has always been when he's been with this Bulls team. He was standing up for his guy. And he got in Grant's face and kind of actually gave him a bit of a headbutt action. And then Grant responded by essentially just kind of like body slamming Robin Lopez down into a bunch of people's laps sitting courtside. Robin didn't like that. Robin gets up and starts doing that very powerful, you know, finger pointing we've seen Robin do before where he gets really upset. And I think the outside of Russ trying to, you know, put all blame on any parties other than himself, the other funny part is, as you mentioned, Boylan got into the scrum and, you know, threw his arms around Grant in like a little bit of a chokehold. The next time you cut to Boylan on the sidelines, he is no longer wearing his tie, which I thought was hilarious. It was like Boylan was preparing himself for the fight to break out again.
Oh, man. People were grabbing the video of Boylan. Like, he was just to his credit, to his defense, he was just trying to rip players apart and make sure nobody actually gets landed by a punch, because that's when serious stuff can start to break out and swings all over the place. But, I mean, I don't remember of any Bulls coaches jumping into the scrum. Like, the last one I can think of is Tibbs, right?
I was going to say, can you see Fred Hoiberg doing that?
I remember Tibbs doing it when Nate Robinson went after somebody against the Nets. Maybe it was former Bulls point guard C.J. Watson. I'm pretty sure there was a fight between C.J. Watson and Nate Robinson back in the Tibbs era, and Tibbs was like pulling players off of each other. Regardless, the fight that broke out was clearly Westbrook's fault. Clearly. I mean, the guy started, and granted, like, maybe he didn't like the way Chris Dunn was playing defense, because Chris Dunn was all over him. I mean, the stats won't tell you it, but on that specific play, Chris Dunn was all over him. He had his hands on his back and, you know, little things. And refs weren't calling it, and then Russ wanted to start it, and Chris Dunn's not having any of that. And can I just say, Chris Dunn was looking to get tossed out of that game after that fight broke out. He was looking to get tossed alongside Robin Lopez, who got tossed on the most clowning part of the entire fight, where he just drops the ball and then he was gone. I love Robin Lopez, man. I made him a 3-point mixtape, too, if you want to check that out on Twitter. I just love the guy, man, and good for him for getting in there and backing up his teammates. But what a wild scene for a Bulls team that continues to get headlines, and this was another one last night.
Did you see Rolo's comments after the game about that second team that got him tossed? He's like, hey, man, like, the refs clearly had a busy, stressful night, and the Thunder needed the ball back for their inbound. I was just trying to help out the refs a little bit, trying to alleviate some of their stress. And of course, you know, Robin, when he did pick up that second tee, his reaction was priceless. It was just like a huge shrug of the shoulders and a giant sigh and an eye roll. I mean, I think it's probably good that they, you know, got Robin out of there before things got too heated. And I agree with you. I was waiting for Chris Dunn to get tossed, because clearly he was animated and worked up after that fight happened. And Steven Adams, man, give that guy credit for being like just an instigator and a mind games guy, because I don't know if you noticed, Jordan, but since the fight, between when the fight happened throughout the rest of the game, any time that Steven Adams could just put his hands on a guy on the Bulls, he was there. Like, you know, it was after a whistle blow, and he would just go around and, like, put his arms around Chris Dunn. There was that one where he had his arms up around Chris Dunn. It, like, almost looked like he was giving Chris, like, the double titty twister. And Chris was like, yo, dude, like, get your hands off of me. I was waiting for a second fight to break out.
I'm pretty sure Chris hit him with an elbow in the face, too. And Steven Adams was like, and it looked like a hard elbow, like, just trying to get him off of him. And Steven Adams looked like he was unfazed. Like, that man could take hits on hits. Like, I think he grew up in a
mind games,
family,
dude.
Of
Steven Adams, you don't mess with Steven Adams. That guy will
I'm
mess
pretty
you
sure
up.
He grew up in a family of like 16 or 18 siblings, something like that. But yeah, you don't mess with that dude. And he was like, he took that elbow after the fight. You're right. He was like, I'm not having any of this, especially on my home floor.
We were talking about it on Bulls Outsiders last night. I want to see Rolo versus Steven Adams, like, in a wrestling ring. Like, give me those two NBA players going at it, like, WWE style.
I probably have to take Steven Adams on that one. That dude, I think that dude is probably one of the scariest dudes in the NBA. If you're going to talk about anybody that could size up somebody and you don't want to mess with, probably taking Steven Adams over anybody in the league. The quotes that came out after the fight I thought were kind of funny. The one specifically who, like, where it all started was Russell Westbrook and Chris Dunn. And Chris Dunn had followed up after the game and basically said a variation of this coming from Casey Johnson. I don't know what really happened, to be honest. Things just got out of hand. He didn't even acknowledge whether Westbrook shoved him or not. Clear was just like, things got heated. It's part of the game. Let's move on. But clearly frustrated by Westbrook's game, too. And Westbrook piled it on, 13 points, 16 rebounds, 11 assists, 5 steals last night, and was still trying to rack up the score against the Bulls after they were down plus 20 in the second half. So, yeah, you know, it's good that the Bulls got out of OKC without anybody getting seriously hurt, without any suspensions, without anybody else getting ejected from that game. So after the fight, I would say that was probably best-case scenario for the Bulls, because easily things could have continued to get out of hand. There was still 15, 16 minutes of gameplay left to go, and Robin was still in the game at one point, so things could have escalated even farther than they did last night.
Yeah, no, it could have gotten worse, and I'm glad that it didn't, because as you said, I mean, I don't think this was a very winnable game for the Bulls coming in. You know, still playing without Zach LaVine, and the Thunder clearly were ready for some revenge after losing to the Bulls last week, and probably knew that they let the Bulls escape with one. And clearly, the Thunder are the better team. So with them playing at home, the Bulls kind of, you know, tired after this weary road trip that included going down to Mexico City and a handful of people getting sick down to Mexico City, and then the travel, and then the amount of energy you expend getting that surprising win against the Spurs, and especially all the effort that you put forth scraping out of a 20-point deficit to get that win. I didn't see this as a very winnable game for the Bulls coming into last night's game. So, Russ gets his triple-double. We get a little extra entertainment with a little bit of a skirmish. And, get out of there. Get back home. Regroup. I saw earlier today via KC Johnson that the Bulls do have the day off today after their long road-weary travels before they play the Brooklyn Nets tomorrow. So hopefully they can regroup, and we'll see what kind of effort they
final
put
topic
tomorrow.
Of the day, Matt. Let's touch on it real fast. So reports came out this weekend that said that up to 15 teams had called the Bulls about Jabari Parker.
Nonsense.
Like, we said this
nonsense
when we talked about it the first time late last week. We said the most likely scenario we see playing out here is a buyout. And I still will hold true to that, because I don't know if I'm necessarily going to buy the fact that the Bulls are going to go out there and, take on a bad contract in order to get a quote-unquote young asset. I don't even know if you move Parker and you take on bad money, what kind of incentive you are to do that. Like, you're going to help another team out, but at the same time, if you're not going to get a first-round pick back for it, or a guy that's controllable and young and feel like you can insert into this roster, there's basically no point. Just let him run the contract out and have the cap space. But I keep flipping back and forth on this idea, Matt, but I truly don't believe from the Bulls front office perspective that they'd entertain the idea of wasting more money the way that they did last year to take on a bad contract in order to get a pick or something. I don't know what your thoughts are.
I mean, what I have heard is that the Bulls would be hesitant to deal Jabari in a trade that forced them to take on money beyond this year. That's what I'm hearing. And I certainly can see where they're coming from. This front office is so obsessed with cap flexibility. Those of us who are realists can turn around and say, okay, well, so if you just waive Jabari or do the buyout or whatever just to get his money off the books to free up all kinds of cap space for yourself in 2019, who are you kidding? You're not signing any big free agents in 2019. This team is dysfunctional right now, and that is a turnoff to potential free agents. And clearly, dysfunctional or not, they don't look like this young core is close to ready enough to actually compete to be an enticing place for an already in their prime star caliber player to join in and say, if I join this team, we'd really be contenders. The Bulls aren't there yet. They're not even close. So because of that, you can say, all right, well, what's the point of cap flexibility if you can't use it because you can't sign free agents? Why not take on a contract? Say, the one that people keep talking about right now is Otto Porter Jr. of the Wizards. Because the Wizards would love to get off that contract, because John Wall's contract is about to bump up to like $45 million next season or something crazy like that. And, Bulls fans are saying, Otto Porter's not a bad player. You could put him in, play him some at the wing where the Bulls really are shallow right now. And, yeah, it's a gross contract, but if the Bulls aren't going to be relevant in the meantime anyway and can't sign free agents in the meantime anyway, maybe get an asset. I don't know if the Wizards are willing to start throwing around picks, considering where they find themselves right now as an irrelevant Eastern Conference team, 12-18. Certainly that wasn't in their game plan. There are a few others. People are like saying that the Jazz are reportedly interested. Maybe they're going to do a favors flip. That was something that was actually talked about between the Bulls and the Jazz last season too, at least as far as speculations and rumors.
Most often is what I'm hearing is the Jazz. And I think things cooled off with the Wizards after that they made that deal with Ariza and got him, and what was a wild deal this weekend that was over, once was a three-way deal, then turned into a two-way deal because of over Dylan Brooks. Like, that whole scenario was just wild. But
we forgot which Brooks we were getting.
It's classic Suns, We get made fun of here in Chicago, but like I said, man, tanking teams help you out because there's always a new storyline to run with dysfunction, and the Suns were the next up.
Yeah, the Bulls weren't the national embarrassment for a solid 12 hours.
Yeah, there. But the bigger case here is if the Bulls are going to take on money or not, and whether that's a good idea or not. It depends on the player to me, and it depends on what value you're getting back. Like, if you're going to take on Otto Porter Jr.'s contract, fine. I'm okay with that, but you've got to get assets too. Like, on top of his value as a potential player, I know the money and his value don't necessarily match up at all, but if you can get something out of him, which a lot of people still think he can be a decent player in a new situation, much like what we talked about with Nico Mirotic here, he goes to a new situation, he's actually pretty decent. Same thing I think can happen with Otto Porter. The question is what would the Wizards want to give up? And now I think that those have kind of quieted. I'm all right with going to look at the Utah Jazz if you're going to take on, I don't know, like I said, maybe they're going to entertain the idea of Dante Exum or,
right,
like you had mentioned, Favors, who doesn't mesh with those guys anymore. I mean, I could see that, but the most you're probably going to squeeze out of them is a second round pick. And if that's what it is, if you don't have to take on guaranteed money for next year and you can squeeze out a second pick, do it. Do it right now. Because that's all, like, if you can find something that's not going to affect you next year, I'm cool with it. Do it. Do it right now. But outside of the taking on the extra money, like for a Chandler Parsons or for a Brandon Knight or for Tim Hardaway Jr., I mean, you got to really look at the value of those players and where you think this team is going the next 2 years. So I doubt the Bulls take on long-term money like a Parsons contract, but that's just me.
I mean, I would be surprised if they take something on like Parsons or certainly Otto Porter, as much as Bulls fans want to keep talking about it. That guy is due $27 million next season and $28.5 million the season after that on a player option. Gee, I wonder if he's going to pick that up. So that is a lot of money to commit to a guy who could be a good role player in the NBA, but you know, if the Bulls are still obsessed with their precious cap flexibility, you know, they treat cap flexibility like, you know, Gollum treats the ring. I don't see it happening. I agree with you. If you're going to flip Jabari and take on a contract like that, you have to get an asset back. But I also agree with you that I don't see the Bulls being able to swing a first-round pick for Jabari unless they take on something massive. As far as bad contracts go, which is why it's a shame that they put themselves in this position in the first place. People are talking about trying to, you know, find the positive here, and maybe you can turn Jabari Parker into an asset. Okay, well, you're taking a guy you outbid only yourselves for and paid him $20 million, who everybody with half a brain knew wasn't a good fit for this team right now, and less than halfway into the season, surprise, two different head coaches have found out that they can't use Jabari on this roster and in this rotation. So now you're trying to make the best of a bad situation and maybe get yourself an asset for Jabari. But in order to do so, you are forced with a decision to essentially, you know, trade him for nothing other than swapping contracts or trading him to get an asset like a draft pick or an interesting young player and take on a very bad contract in addition to it. It's a gross situation. We'll see how the Bulls try and work themselves out of it. I'm with you. I think it's still possible that there aren't trades that they can make work and that a buyout is what happens. And the whole 15 teams are interested thing, I don't buy it either. We even, like, you know, there are reports that the Utah Jazz PR came out and said, we have not had conversations with the Bulls about Jabari Parker. We have not had conversations with the Bulls about any trades this season. So, I'm sorry, this whole, like, oh, there are so many teams interested in Jabari nonsense we're hearing right now, I don't buy it.
I don't buy it either. The fact that they were saying, oh, yeah, we, you know, a trade could be looming. We have 15 potential deals that we need to feed through. It's like, that's just buying yourself more time and thinking fans are stupid when clearly they're not. Just to wrap up on the Jazz real quick, that would probably be the most interesting place to put Parker as far as success goes. There's the Mormon connection there too. Like, people are putting that two and two together there. I don't know how much that buys you, but I think Quinn Snyder's a good coach and maybe can get whatever it is Jabari needs in order to be successful out of him. And clearly the guys up in Milwaukee weren't able to do that. We clearly weren't be able to do it here in Chicago, which we knew. But the Jazz do own all of their first round picks. They own all of their second round picks. Their 2020 actually goes to Cleveland. They own San Antonio's 2022 second round picks. So there are picks to be had among the Jazz if you want to take on a future second round pick, if you can get anything out of him. But I agree, Matt. I don't see this scenario ending with a Jabari Parker trade unless the Bulls are fully committed to taking on a bad contract and being able to squeeze assets out of another team. But who really wants to do that unless you're just trying to do it for cap relief? And so there's very minimal teams that are looking to do that and add Parker right now. And not playing the guy either hurts his value. Every single game he doesn't play in, people forget what he did and might lose value and might continue to lose value. So I see this scenario still ending in a buyout more so than anything else. Last thing I got for you, how mad are you that Gar Forman went and did an interview with the LA Times and wouldn't speak to anybody here in Chicago media?
I mean, I did notice that and I thought it was funny that we have not heard from Gar here in Chicago since the Hoiberg firing and the beginning of the Boylan era. We haven't heard from him. Paxson is the one who has been talking. Paxson is the one who spoke at Advocate Center on the day when they made the change. Gar was in the building, but he did not speak.
Gar is absolutely safe, yes.
And then again, down in Mexico City, responding to the week of insanity with the near player mutiny and all, and Boylan's new rigidity as the head coach and all that stuff, it was once again Paxson speaking to the media, which is nothing away from the norm. You and I have talked about this on this show, about how Paxson is the one who has taken on the vocal leader of the front office, and he's the one who speaks for the organization to the media, and that Gar has taken a backseat in that regard and is focused on doing his, you know, daily duties, whatever those are, not scouting.
But we did want to get younger, and we do want to get more athletic.
You know, not signing contracts.
We've added Jerian Grant, who we talked about.
Not liking Luka Doncic.
Not liking Luka Doncic. Not going to international scouting events.
We have all our first round picks into the future.
Paul
we
got Zipser, who we're high on.
Paul Zipser, who we're high on.
The fact that he somehow decided that he could go give some quotes to some random columnist for the LA Times, I got a chuckle out of it. But to me, it's like, I still think that the reason Gar doesn't talk to the media here in Chicago is because Michael Reinsdorf doesn't want him to. And John Paxson doesn't want him to.
Part of developing young players and a culture for these young players is we want them exposed to winning.
Because they know that even more so than Paxson, who still at the very least has a little bit of fondness and familiarity among the fan base, and I think fans are slowly starting to figure out that, hey, Paxson is just as culpable and responsible as Gar Forman is for a lot that's gone wrong in recent years. But Paxson still has that, hey, I helped win this organization 3 rings. I'm Paxson. Game 6, Phoenix. I hit the 3. You know, remember? Paxson still has at least some of that on his name. Nobody in Chicago likes Gar Forman. No, I defy you to find me one Bulls fan out there who is a Gar Forman stan at this point.
Nobody even in
who
the
actually
national
has
media
a clue
is.
As to what's going on.
I mean,
and because of that, I think Paxson has said, yo, Gar, buddy, let's put you back behind the scenes. You're still our guy. You're still safe. I still believe in what you're doing as the GM of this team, but we're not going to let you talk to the media anymore. And so Gar, like, got a request or something from somebody from the LA Times. It was like, ooh, can I, Pax? And Paxson was like, ugh, yeah, fine, whatever.
And really, we've kept our flexibility long term, which was also important to us.
We're exactly where we want to be and exactly where we should be. Should follow that. Put that on a friggin' t-shirt, because that is the most insane thing to say after the 2 weeks the Bulls have had. So, and from the guy that's evaluating your player talent, nonetheless. But, hey, they only want him to talk when good things are happening with this team. I mean, there's you can timestamp it. Every good thing that every positive thing that has come about the Bulls, Gar and Pax talk. Anytime there's a negative situation, just Pax talks. So, I mean, clearly there is some, hey, we'll let Gar talk. We do let Gar talk, but it's only when there's positive things to say. So, I just found it wild. Like, you'll give the LA Times quotes, but won't allow him to talk to anybody here that covers the team on a daily basis. That, to me, just blows my mind. So, I don't know. That's the way this is operated, I guess. So, that's the way we got to continue, is continue to get quotes halfway across the country from a guy that probably has watched, I don't know, 30 minutes of Bulls basketball the entire season. So, yeah.
If you've learned anything, it is don't be surprised by anything that happens.
That is very true. Well, I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on social media on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan Z. Nelly, and at Bulls _ Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, on Instagram at Locked On Bulls. Posting new stuff there every single day, so do give us a follow on Instagram. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us a text message or a voicemail. We're doing mailbag tomorrow, so get excited for that. We also have a former NBA player coming on this week, so get excited for that. A guy that has been touted as a veteran leader in this league. He's been on a bunch of different teams and working his way back to make it back to the NBA. So we'll talk to him. But for Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.